We all know that women are not funny. And no one proves it better than Kay Ballard, the accidental lawyer who is the accidental host of our show. Of course, every accident that Kay Ballard encounters is intentional. And now her intention is to accidentally disprove the show's premise. So sit back and enjoy a fun conversation that matters between Kay and today's fabulous featured guest. Welcome to Women Are Not Funny Radio.
Hello, this is Kay Ballard, and you have my promise. We're going to try to do our best to prove the premise wrong. I'm so glad you're here today because we're going to continue the conversation about fashion and what could be more important. Our guest today is Shauna Trinholm, and she's an advocate for a sustainable and elegant lifestyle that doesn't ignore fashion but involves drastically editing and cutting back on the clothes in your closet. She does not believe that you need to have a huge wardrobe in order to have a happy life. Let's just pause there and think about that. I mean, is that true? Could that be true? Anyway, it should be interesting to each of you because let's face it, unless you are nude, you are wearing clothing. Now, today we're going to be talking to Shauna about her initiative, the $100 Wardrobe Challenge. And also, why it is so difficult for some of us to be sensible about the clothes we buy and wear, and her belief that small is better. So, before, though, we can talk to her about that. You know what I have to ask when I have to find out, and it's not because I'm paranoid. It's because I just need to know where she stands. Shauna, are you using this appearance on Women Are Not Funny Radio as a stepping stone to something better?
Well, Kay, it would be hard to top this. So I would say that I think this is probably the pinnacle for me.
Oh, darling, you're right. It is. But listen, I heard you talk, and you are rather ambitious. I know you will. Are you using this as an opportunity to try out, to audition, to take over the show?
Well, Kay, I can't really discuss this. My confidentiality agreement with your producer prevents me from saying anything more, but I would recommend that you have a small box near your desk later on this afternoon, and I have a feeling you'll probably be having a conversation about who's hosting the show.
Oh, dear. I knew this was a mistake, and I thought what I had ahead of me was just, you know, kind of a lecture. Because as I told you, I could be the poster child, essentially the don't poster for your new initiative, the $100 Wardrobe Challenge. And let me tell listeners what this is about, and then I love doing this because I get it wrong, and then you can correct me, and then they'll know the, you know, they'll know what it actually is. This is an initiative that was dreamed up by Shauna and her friend Sophia, and they are encouraging, not really, they're challenging, they're insisting that we join them in this challenge, and here's what the challenge is. Pare down your closets to the essentials, the things you actually wear, and organize your closets with those few things that you actually wear, and then pledge not to spend more than $100 on clothing items, clothing and accessories, for the remainder of the year. Did I get it right?
That's a very nice summation of the project, yes.
Where on earth, darling, did you get this idea?
Well, this has been something that I have played around with for many years as an advocate for small, as you mentioned, and loving tiny homes, tiny cars, and anything that will allow you to live your life in a light and nimble way. the wardrobe challenge was just sort of an offshoot of that. One of the businesses that I used to have years and years ago, I've always been starting little businesses and running them on the side when I had a alleged real job, and that was about 100 years ago. Anyway, I used to go in and do closet cleans for my swanky clients. I was in retail and the fashion industry for many, many years, and so I intimately know that side of the fashion world, and you would not believe the stuff I would find in these closets. It was, well, I think it was close to horrifying, but you might have liked it. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I mean, isn't it possible that you're just simply easily horrified?
Oh, I am horrified on a pretty much hourly basis because it's a lot to be horrified about. But, you know, when you find that someone is hanging on to their dirndl skirt they got on their Sound of Music tour in Austria in 1973, I'm sorry, that is not a good fashion decision.
Well, but, okay, you know, I mean, I think it is my duty to challenge you on these things. So this Sound of Music tour in Austria, her souvenir was her dirndl skirt. And we know a dirndl skirt, even if they're, you know, tacky, they are definitely classic, right?
Yeah, I guess they're classic, but with all that crazy passementerie stitching and all of that stuff, I just don't know. I don't think it's the most flattering shape for a lot of women. And classic or no, that's not a reason to hang on to something. And I would argue that most of us have our memories firmly implanted in our heads. You know, we take all these photographs, we buy all these silly little tchotchkes when we travel or what have you, and then we store them away. We don't look at them, but, you know, we certainly talk about our experiences. I mean, maybe we talk about the Sound of Music tour and how much we think we look like Julie Andrews, perhaps, or, you know, that kind of thing. I think that keeping all of those things in your life, and especially in your wardrobe, just clutters your visual field of what's a real and viable option for your daily real life, not your Sound of Music life.
Well, I am in this precarious position of both agreeing and disagreeing with you, you know, because one of the things, and I can picture you, actually, Shauna, in that role, being harsh to your women with the dirndl skirts. we don't have to really go much further than an example that we're all familiar with, and that's the show What Not to Wear. Yes. When you and I were doing a pre-production phone call, you described to me what you did in this little offshoot business, and it sounded very much to me like that. And I think that'd be very valuable for most of us to have a very harsh, objective outside observer telling us, no, that does not look good. But you know, even though life is harsh and those things are not always fun to hear. But here's the thing, closets. Now,
yes,
we have seen gigantic closets on television. I have to say, even though I've never had a 1,000-square-foot Oprah-style closet, I have had some pretty nice closets and do to this day. And actually, well, this week on Twitter, one of our Twitter friends posted a photo of a closet she saw that had a chandelier in it. I've never had one in with a chandelier, but I have had, and still do, have closets that actually have an art collection in them. What do you think about that?
Well, see, I think that's fabulous, but I'm a fan of aesthetics. I mean, I have a highly developed aesthetic sensibility. I'm not advocating for the classic sort of what I call hair shirt minimalism, you know, where some would suggest that you run around in a burlap sack all day. That's not what I'm saying. And I think art in a closet, I mean, art has a place everywhere. And so, you know, we talked, as you mentioned, in pre-production about fashion as having a role in art and culture. And I really do believe that it does. So I think that your closet having art, that's fantastic, as long as you allow others in there to view your art collection.
Well, for a period of time, I had a co-op apartment in downtown D.C. that I stayed in during the week when I was in the city. And it was very small. It was less than 700 square feet, but it had a very big dressing room. And I put, a good number of paintings in there because I just like to be there. And I did have too many clothes. Now, my closet here in this particular home is a huge walk-in closet, and I actually have paintings, little paintings, that reference clothing. So I have little paintings of dresses hung on the few spaces that there aren't dresses hanging, So it's, I think what has happened to me is, yes, I am divorced. The listeners know. Oh my goodness, they know because I talk about it ad nauseum. Since my divorce is a celebrity and has its own comedy CD, KK's Divorce.
But it's fabulous, by the way.
Well, thank you, Shauna. Since my divorce is fabulous, it's really the best divorce I've ever had. And but anyway, since the divorce, I have wanted my residences to be rather girly. I just think it's it's kind of a backlash. Now since I'm alone, I'm going to act like it. And so this particular home that I'm in today, I even have a collection of art glass handbags. So it's kind of like a homage to fashion that you cannot wear at all. Now, speaking of not wearing it all, you told me that when you were doing this work as a stylist, not only did you run into dirndl skirts from Austria, you also ran into clothes hanging in the closet that still had price tags on them.
Oh, yes. That's, I think, a common affliction, especially for women. Not so much for men. I have seen the inside of a couple of male closets, I have to confide in you and all of our listeners.
Yeah, I can't imagine. But go ahead.
One or two. But one or two. So that doesn't seem to be, men tend to be much more, I would say, fashion survivalists. They buy something when they absolutely need it. And, I won't even talk about the whole underwear program for men. That's a whole other story. So getting back to your topic about clothing with price tags on it. Women,
you're right.
Have
men don't do that. Men do not do that.
No, they don't. And they don't feed that need with stuff. At least clothing. They buy things like, I think jet skis is what they're called. What are those things called? And Hummers and big stuff they buy when they feel a sense of emptiness or need to impress or be a part of a group. And women buy shirts and pants and shoes and more shoes.
But as I was thinking about our conversation and doing what could officially be called preparing, I started thinking really in a very deep way, Shauna, about the root of this thing. Because I think for most women, and I'm just assuming so because it's certainly true for me, I have such a history with fashion and buying clothes and wearing clothes and so forth, then it really, really does get complicated. And it starts for most women at childhood, right? Because
yes.
Even though men, little tiny child men, experience this as well, is not the same way for men. From a very early age, most women are judged by their appearance.
Absolutely.
And so you start as a little tiny girl, actually a baby, but a little tiny girl, and you know that fashion and cute clothes are one way to get approval, right?
Yes, and you can see it in the as you said, the earliest phases. You've got a bald little baby girl, so what do? You tape a bow to her head. So, there's lots of accessorizing and of course, gender identity going on at that point for very young girls. And, but I don't think...
All right, but let me just... Let me stop you there and say, then the next thing that happens, and I believe this is true for a lot of women, both as mothers and daughters, the shopping experience and the clothing buying experience is one way that mothers and daughters interact, a very important way, through both shopping and then also, you know, it's either bonding or it's Mortal Kombat around the purchase of clothes.
Right. I think it's a condition. I'm not sure that it's an important function of the mother-daughter experience. And so I'm curious why you would think that that's an important function.
Well,
I think it's
a function
that happens often, but
yeah.
I'm not so sure that it's good for, ultimately, I don't believe it's good for young girls or, you know, young woman's self-esteem to have that early conditioning that, you know, who you are is what you wear.
I agree with that. But this, what I'm talking about here is something a little different. I think I'm not saying it's the best way or a good way even for mothers and daughters to bond. But it is one way, it is one function of shopping a lot of times. You know, I mean,
right.
what you are proposing, darling, and you know this and you're proud of it, what you are proposing is rather revolutionary, right? Because these things that we do, the way that we live, is pretty much entrenched, and you are proposing something very different. So what you would say then, yes, you may observe that some mothers and daughters bond through their shopping experiences, but there are better ways for them to bond. They could go surfing, right?
Absolutely. I'm suggesting that meaning can be, I hesitate to use the word should, so I'll say it out loud and then I'll shy away from it. Meaning can be made from experiences rather than things. I mean, I would certainly rather spend a week in Paris with my mom than a week in Walmart with my mom, or Nordstrom for that matter. You know, but one woman's hell, I guess, is another woman's Paris. So,
for me, it's too late. You know, it really is, because the kind of thing I'm talking about where my mother and I bonded over shopping, you know,
right.
that time in our relationship is over, although we continue to shop together. But, you know, here is another thing. Here's another memory from my past that involved the purchase of clothing. My first purchase of my own clothing, it wasn't clothing, actually, it was shoes, gold metallic sandals that I bought with babysitting money.
And I bought a pony with my babysitting money, but yes.
Well, you maybe babysit more than I did, you know.
I was very entrepreneurial.
But, you know, because about the time I was old enough to babysit, I started having a social life of my own, so babysitting was a little less interesting than it would have been otherwise. But, you know, that was a very important thing for me, because I took money that I had made myself, and I went out and bought what I thought was just a, you know, extremely cool fashion item, these gold metallic strappy sandals. And so, once again, I think for some women, buying clothing and having great clothing and buying lots of clothing and buying trendy clothing is all wrapped up in a feeling of achievement and accomplishment.
Right, but sadly, that's the surface. When you actually talk to these women, and the women that I've worked with over the years, and especially when I had my styling and closet cleaning business, they weren't happy. They looked at these hundreds to thousands of items that they had, and they still felt like they had nothing to wear. They felt guilty about the money they had spent with the items that were in the closet, you know, with the tag still hanging on them. And so I would say, yes, if that makes you truly feel great. I mean, I've made some stellar shoe purchases in my day, let me tell you, that I still, you know, that I got the mileage out of. I felt great about it. They were the perfect thing. Everything was right about it. And, but I'm sure, well, maybe you haven't, but I have made some purchases that later I thought, you know, what the hell was I doing? And I think that sentiment is echoed by a lot of the women that I work with, that they aren't gratified by their consumption, that they're not finding the fulfillment, and you know, nobody's really paying that much attention to them anyway. I mean, unless you're dressing like Lady Gaga, most people don't really notice that you've worn that same pair of black pants for 3 days in a row. I mean, people are too busy, mm-hmm. like the UK, you know, being concerned with, you know, what's
well,
there.
Well, I think what you're saying is true and untrue. And I definitely believe that the source of happiness isn't any sort of tangible items that you can possess, although they can be very nice. But I don't think we can ignore that clothing is, and the way you dress and the way you look in your clothes is, whether it should be or not, the source of approval for many people. Because we do judge, you know, maybe you do not. I'm not that nice. I do notice what people wear. And so if they look good, I notice. If they dress in a way that shows the sophistication, I notice. It is a marker of success, whether it should be or not. And we all know, in the back of our heads, we know that someone who looks good is not necessarily successful. They may have thousands of dollars of credit card debt, right? Although that's less possible now given the economy. And also, clothing can be, despite the fact that you found women, and I believe you because I can relate to many of the things you're saying, but the right clothing can really bring you some comfort, some physical comfort, knowing you look good or something that feels good on your body, right? Because it's very connected to our physical selves. But
you just tapped into two things that are very important. One, the logical fallacy that because you have a lean wardrobe, therefore you won't look good, you won't look sophisticated, or you know, you won't present in the way that you'd like the world to perceive you. That's not true. More in that sense does not mean better, because you can only wear, at least I can only wear one pair of pants at a time. I don't know about you, but, you know, to have
you know what? That is not true. I'm sorry. I must call you on that. You know, you say you don't know about me. You do know about me. You know I also can only wear one pair of pants at a time. That's true.
Okay, so we're good on that. So to make the assumption that you're not going to be stylish, you're not going to be pulled together, you're not going to look absolutely fabulous just because you've got a lean wardrobe of, as your second point was, things that make you feel good, things that look good and that you put on and that you just feel like, yes, you know, this is the thing that makes me feel like who I really am and how I want to present myself to the world. And we make that comment on the About page on the $100 Wardrobe Challenge site that we say that deciding what to wear can be daunting. So why clutter your visual and mental fields with too many options? Too many options that don't fit right, that don't suit your innate sense of style, or just plain make you feel uncomfortable, itchy, ridiculous, or crabby. So I'm suggesting, and I am a proponent, for getting rid of things that just don't make you look and feel fabulous. And I've yet to meet a woman that's got a full closet that can say that everything in there really speaks to her in that way.
Well, I totally agree. And I want to tell you two brief stories that illustrate extremes. I mentioned to you that my own sister is a champ at this, and she's quite affluent and could have any sort of wardrobe that she wants. And she's also a very delightful size and shape. In fact, she is works part-time as a personal trainer for clients and does a lot of work herself on keeping her own body just slim and trim and beautiful. And she will, in the first place, she will not buy anything unless it fits her perfectly. And she will not wear anything unless it fits her perfectly. And she keeps a very tight closet because she agrees with you, you're only going to wear two or three things any given season because those are the things that you look the best in. So she's a perfect example of someone who has absolutely figured it out and thrives with that sort of lifestyle. And believe me, she travels and goes to the most elegant places. So she has a beautiful wardrobe and looks really good in her clothes. I have another friend who also always looks great. And several years back, I do not see this friend anymore because she lives in a different city, but several years back, and I knew she was a shopaholic and she was a bargain shopper, but one day I was over at her house and she decided to give me the grand tour. And this was a Victorian home with quite a few rooms, and some of the rooms were empty. And she took me to room after room and showed me closet after closet of clothing. Many of the things were in bags, but they all had price tags on them. Then she took me to the attic where she had two very long clothing rods that were set up there so she could store additional clothes in the closet. We're talking about hundreds of clothes. We're talking about very high-end clothes because she had very good taste, but for the most part, she had bought them for a song. You know, she'd just gotten them at really good closeout prices, whatever. And she was recovering from ovarian cancer. And I said to her, I'll call her Sue, that is not her name. I said, oh, Sue, oh, my God, forget the cancer, you have a problem. I had no idea. I had absolutely no idea, Shauna, but this is what I saw. And so, you know, I have a few things in my closet with the tags still on them, but, you know, I don't have that sort of problem, but I have witnessed it myself in the very, very extreme.
And that is the extreme, and I've seen that not quite to that degree. That's she's definitely got an issue with that.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine. I can't even wrap my mind around that many closets. I mean, you can. It's kind of like my car theory. You can only drive one car at a time. You know, I just don't see the point of just this crazy mass accumulation of stuff.
Yeah, no, it is true. And taking a little further, someone who on two occasions, you know, has made the mistake of owning two houses at the same time, and I'm in that situation now, you can only live in one at one time, too. But, okay, so who gets a pass, Shauna? I came up with some people who maybe should get a pass, and then see if you agree. Does Michelle Obama get a pass? Can she have lots of clothes?
Well, I guess the thing is I don't get to decide who gets the pass. And I would say that, sure, she can have lots of clothes. I mean, she doesn't seem to be overly frivolous in her wardrobe. You know, it's certainly not. I just got myself in big trouble. I think her style is not for me, but I think it's very sensible, and it's certainly less flamboyant than it could be in her, well, not flamboyant, I guess, because I guess the president's wives are not usually flamboyant, but it's a fairly sedate wardrobe. So, sure, she can keep her wardrobe.
It is sedate. I guess my point was Michelle Obama. I would give a pass, and see, you know, I think that's so charming of you that you don't see yourself as the arbiter, the person who decides who gets a pass. I'm so different from you, Shauna. I decide who gets a pass. That's the way I feel about it. I think Michelle Obama gets a pass because she's being photographed constantly. You know, I think anyone who is constantly being photographed, and she is, you know, her clothing choices are going to be reviewed and talked about. It's a very public role, and fashion and support of the American fashion industry is almost put off on her. Now, someone else, Paris Hilton, never, supposedly, never wears the same thing twice. And I think, oh, my, that would be a real pain because what do you do when you come across an outfit that you love? You love, but it's gone. It's disposable because you only wear something once. But here's someone else who I think gets a pass. I have two more categories. One is people working in the fashion industry. I think it's kind of part of their, I think it's necessary to their career to be very trendy a lot of times. You know, it depends on what they're doing in fashion, but I think they maybe get a pass. And the other person category that gets a pass is a high school teacher, because despite what you said about no one cares if you wear the same three pairs or the same pair of black knit pants for 3 days, oh man, if you're teaching high school students, they notice and they care. I don't care if they wear the same pair of jeans for 3 weeks. They're going to talk about the teacher who wears the same thing every day. They will.
Well, I guess if your self-esteem is predicated on what a bunch of barely post-pubescent teens think of you, then that, I think, speaks greater volumes about maybe what you need to do about your self-esteem. But I can't even imagine being in that position. To be honest, I think I would just want to wear some sort of a Kevlar
combat gear
all the time. Yeah. So I don't know. And you know, teachers, I love them, but most of them I don't think of as being kind of the pinnacle of, again, let's not even talk fashion, let's talk style. Teachers
right.
tend to be not overly stylish, at least the ones I've experienced. So if they're
well,
getting a
is...
pass based on that, I mean, man, then they have some work to do.
The point, though, is you did notice. You did notice because your impression is school teachers are not terribly fashionable. And maybe,
right.
you know, maybe they're not required to be. But to me, I'll give them a pass. If any of them want to be fashionable, I'll give them a pass for that.
Okay.
They're going to be criticized, you're right, by, you know, some munchkins who probably aren't so well-dressed themselves. But, you know, we love to promote indie musicians on the show. We usually do have a song to play by someone. And you and I put our heads together and came up with someone fabulous. And we put the word out. And I can't imagine, you know, the opportunity to be featured on Women Are Not Funny is so prestigious. And
don't
to join...
tell me.
To join our elite group of musicians that have been featured was such an opportunity. He must be in Europe or touring or something, because
my
we
heart.
Didn't hear back from him.
Oh.
But I thought, you know, that I might, being kind of a fan of my own talent, and even though I hold none whatsoever in the musical realm, I thought I might sing a little bit. And, you know, there's something called the 7-second rule, which would state that you can use 7 seconds of a work without violating any copyright. The fact of the matter is that's untrue. It's simply untrue.
Oh, no.
So what I'm about to do may not even be 7 seconds long, but it probably is a violation of copyright, and it is going to be lovely, and it does make a fashion point. See if it's a song you like. It's an Otis Redding song, Try a Little Tenderness. Here goes. Young girls, they do get weary. They get weary. Oh, I've already forgotten the lyric, Shauna. Wearing the same. That's good, though, because it's less of a copyright violation. Wearing the same old shabby dress. So, what do you think?
I think, well, first of all, I'm pretty much just stunned by your rendition. So, it's hard for me to wrap my mind around the message, because the rendition was just. It was beautiful, Kay. It was really beautiful.
You know what?
Really
I think it was amazing. And I think it kind of lost something for me to forget the lyric midstream, but, you know, it
I think there was a certain spontaneity and a sort of a joie de vivre about it.
Well, it is true, though. I mean, isn't there a danger that if we pare down our closets, we'll just get weary wearing the same old shabby dress? The dress becomes shabby and we're weary, and oh my goodness, isn't that a problem?
I suspect that would be a problem, yes. But again, I think that you're still talking about that hair, shirt, minimalist aesthetic. And mm-hmm. that is not my aesthetic. My aesthetic is things that look lovely, but not tons of them. And you keep things in good repair. And when they're no longer in good repair, you move them on. And then you make a conscious and well thought out purchase. And only, you know, each individual has to decide what that is. I mean, maybe for me it's $50 for a dress, and maybe for you it's $5,000 for a dress. I don't know. You know, the $100 challenge was just let's pick something fairly easy that most people can do, because some people probably won't spend $100 I hope you're sitting down, Kay, but in an entire year on their wardrobe. And you know, I didn't want to make it an amount that would be unrealistic. I wanted everybody to be able to participate. But it is a challenge for that particular reason. So, yes, we do run the risk of looking shabby, but I don't think there's any room for shabby in the $100 wardrobe challenge.
Well, and I want to tell listeners, those who know you know this already, but those who are just meeting you for the first time today, Shauna is beautiful and always looks good. She is very much into aesthetics, as she said, and she is an artist, a photographer. She loves art. And speaking of that, one of the links on the show notes takes you to a page about her little smart car. And Shauna has been an early adopter of that vehicle and someone who's achieved some visibility through her association with that car. But the first post there at the moment is so cool because it is, I believe, what is a commissioned work of art where a painter has done his version of your car in orange.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, I love
orange.
That painting. How I love that painting. Isn't it wonderful?
It's so fantastic. And he's a pretty well-known, internationally known graffiti artist, how he started, but he's also a fine artist, and he does lots of work in a variety of ways, major museum installation walls and that kind of thing. And he just did this for me, and I picked it up last week, and it hangs proudly above my couch in my tiny little casita, and I just love it. So I hope everybody takes a look at it, because it's really a fun painting.
Oh, it is wonderful, and I'm extremely envious of you both for the car and also for the painting. I love the painting. And, probably your car is going to, I think your car is white. Your car is probably going to start being a little cantankerous and wanting to be orange. And so just look out for that. Okay, so, one of the things that we don't normally do, and I think we should on Women Are Not Funny, I think I should give listeners tips. So I had a fashion tip, and this is a very sincere fashion tip, and I think people will prosper from knowing it. I can give a tip about how to wear clothes that never go out of style.
Excellent.
Wouldn't that be a very valuable tip?
I think it would be fabulous.
Yeah, well, you just simply buy things that are never in style in the first place.
That is fantastic, Kay. I don't know why I didn't think of that myself.
It really works,
Shauna. If you look around, I think the bulk of humanity does that already.
Well, I mean, you really do not have to worry. If you don't buy trend, you do not have to worry about it going out of style. Now, here's something that we talked about that is just crazy, but to my surprise, you admitted that you have actually done it yourself. I certainly have, and I can't even explain it. I can't defend it. The whole concept of buying to save money. you know, to the point that you feel guilty if you don't buy something. If you see something, let's say you see a great dress. It's probably what kind of tripped up my friend Sue with all the hundreds of clothes with the tag still on. You see something that is such a fabulous buy. You feel like you, if you do not purchase it, somehow you are being irresponsible.
Right. That's what I consider bad math, akin to playing the lottery or renting a storage unit. That's another thing, one of my other pet peeves, but we won't get started on that. Maybe that's for another show. But, yes, the idea that the item was $100 and you buy it for $50, so therefore you save $50 is just absurd to me. No, you spent $50. Had you not purchased that hideous sweater with the Christmas tree that lights up on it for $50, you'd still have $50 in your pocket for, I don't know, a cheese plate and a nice French rosé.
Well, that is very true. And I think probably I don't, you know, it depends on the jurisdiction. Maybe they are already illegal somewhere. But Christmas sweaters should be illegal, shouldn't they?
Yes, they should be. Yeah, anything with holiday imagery on it that you wear on the front of your chest should be illegal.
Yeah, it should be a misdemeanor anyway. And so now here is an idea that I think would be very appealing to you. There is an entrepreneur in Idaho who has a very successful company named after himself, and he's all over the web. You see his little banner ads everywhere. And the fact of the matter is, it looks to me to be a great product. I have not purchased one myself, but I think I want one, and that is a Scotty vest. Are you familiar with a Scotty vest?
No. Is it what it sounds like? Does it have Scotty dogs on it?
No, not at all. I mean, his name is Scott. His name is Scott, and so he named the company after himself. But it is he has a line of clothing that you could call outdoor clothing or travel clothing, both. And the Scotty vest has 22 different pockets. Shauna, it is the world's tiniest condo. That's what I think it is. It is like you really ought to be an advocate of this, because with that Scotty vest and its 22 pockets, you could just consider yourself wearing your own tiny condo.
I think that's a great idea. I mean, the thing is, it still has to look good. I mean, a lot of those things are pretty cheesy. That's kind of like wearing one of those fishing vest thingies. Those have a lot of pockets, too. But I do like to have snacks with me wherever I go, so this could work out really well.
You could have snacks and batteries and your camera and whatever. It appears to be, and, you know, you cannot always tell by photographs, but he shows videos of it, too, and it seems to be very well designed. I can't figure it out, but he just fills it full, or his models fill it full of all this stuff, and they don't have bulges. So I don't know how that works, but it appears that it does, and it appears that they've kind of solved the problem.
It sounds like some photoshopping is going on. I better go check this out. I don't know. Does it come in a variety of colors like Donna Karan and Armani? Because then I might consider it.
Yeah, no, it actually doesn't. It comes in black and tan and maybe red. So, you know, it is limited. But I just feel like, you know, I may have to try one out. And I'm thinking if I get one, and I forget how much they cost. They're not inexpensive, but they have it fixed up. So you can have your iPad and you can build in your earphones. And so, you know, it's just really, really cool that way. And it even holds an iPad. But I think if I buy one, I'm going to go gigantic. I'm going to get a man's and go, you know, go gigantic just to make sure that it would hold everything I needed in the 22 pockets, because
so it could,
you know,
be a mansion.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. I have my own ideas from knowing you, and I'm a faithful reader of your blog. I get it in digest form. Oh, here. I have to stop for a moment. So you don't like stuff, but what is the name of your blog, sweetheart? Myriad of Things?
Myriad Things, yes. Yes. No, now, Kay, don't misquote me. That is such a nasty media thing to do. I like stuff, just not quantities, just not gross amounts of it. I like select things. I mean, you know that. You've seen the pictures. You've seen me. You've seen the pictures of my house, although it's tiny. And I just have a well-edited collection, and I think that that's where we should all be looking to go, is well-edited.
Well, I agree with that, and I thoroughly enjoy your blog, and I get it in a digest form every once a week, and so I have a good time going through. And one of the things where your sense of humor really comes through is in your photography, because a lot of them, a lot of your photographs, they're so much fun. They're almost sight gags. Would you agree with that?
Yes. Definitely. Tongue firmly planted in cheek on a lot of the photographs that I take and the other things that I post.
I mean,
like the Dual Metal Master. Did you see the Dual Metal Master?
Yes. I just love, and you'll take a photograph of a flower growing in an unusual place. Are you at a concert, but we get a view of your well-manicured feet. Watching the concert, you know,
right.
it's just a fun collection of photographs that you drop in on us, and also some interesting. You also expose your loyal readers, I being one of them, to people around the world who are living small, and so you reference other blog posts and
Right. Bring
us photographs from other people's blogs about that living small pursuit.
Right, yeah. I am always on the lookout on the web for tiny houses and people. Again, it's people that live stylishly in tiny houses. It's not, people that just decide to carve out some hollow in a redwood tree and live in that. I mean, I think that's probably fine as well. But that's not my aesthetic sensibility. And I think recently, within the last month or so, I posted someone that has I think, 170 or 200 square foot apartment in New York. And you and I discussed it, that it was sort of overwhelming the amount of stuff he had in there. But the fact that he created a very stylish home out of what some people would think of as a closet, I think is pretty remarkable. And that's where you get the creative inspiration, I think, is creativity like that comes with constraints.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's one of the things really, and I don't even know that I have the tools to discuss it, but it's the whole, you know, one of the things that you advocate, and you're doing so through the $100 Wardrobe Challenge. And, of course, our listeners know that we have clickable links all over the show notes, so they can go to your site and take a look at the program and all of its different aspects, because it has several different aspects. But one of the things that you don't advocate, you actually advocate cleaning out your closet, not just organizing it, not just buying every last way to get things stacked up, you know, and underneath the bed. Or
Right. You
don't say, hey, keep that dirndl skirt from your tour of Austria, put it in plastic and tissue, and put it safely under the bed. No, you do not. You say, kiss it goodbye. And so that is, you know, that is a very interesting thing. How do you feel about, you know, the apartment that you just mentioned? I commented on your blog that I thought it looked terrible, and the reason it did is because it was just junky. You know, yes,
Right. It
was 280 square feet, but he had all of his, he had a huge CD collection in their jewel cases. He had books stacked everywhere. And so I would advocate he gets himself a Scotty vest. He gets himself a Kindle. He loses the books. He puts the CDs on his iPod and, gets a little space going in that 280.
I completely agree. He needs some breathing room in there. He does not honor white space, and he needs to do that a little bit because it makes me claustrophobic personally to see all of that chaos going on. But again, my point was mostly that somebody lives here and they've made it, while not my style, they've made it a home that has a personal stamp, and they're able to do everything that they say or, everything that a person needs to do. And so many people always say to me, oh, I could never live in 500 square feet. Like, oh, really? You could never? I just think there's so much self-limitation around size and stuff and how much we think we absolutely have to have to continue to pursue these lives that aren't all that fulfilling.
Yeah. And my own experience, and you've probably experienced this as well, but when you have a really huge house, you just become a space hawk. You don't, it's very shocking how accustomed you become to living in a huge space. And you don't ever evaluate whether or not it's necessary. It just seems rather ordinary. And so I, as someone who's lived in huge homes and also in very small homes, I think it's just a matter of being bought into whatever you're doing and then getting used to it, don't you?
I think so as well. And I think that's where people that have the hardest time with that are people that have lived in really huge homes, because it almost becomes a right in a sense. I mean, even though the bulk of the planet, people do not live in the homes the size that we are accustomed to living in, there's something about this sort of entitlement that we have that, well, I deserve it. If I can buy it, I deserve it. And
well,
I think
there's that, but I think it's way, way more complicated than that. And there is kind of a backlash that happens to some people. I know when I left my last huge home, and that wasn't at the time of the divorce. Well, I was still married, and my ex-husband and I decided to go small. It was, part of it was a reaction to living in such a huge house and all of the upkeep and responsibility. You know, I was working very hard in my own law practice, and everything I was doing was devoting to maintaining my lifestyle. And the year that we sold the house and moved into a much smaller property, there were two people on our street who had similarly huge homes, and they actually sold, both of these couples sold their homes and moved into boats, which were really small. So, I think a lot of people get to a breaking point on big. I had a situation. I had so many rooms in my home. When the realtor came to discuss listing the home, we went into one of the rooms and there was some water damage from the roof, because this had a very fancy, weird roof. And so there were, regardless of what you did, it was likely to leak. And she said, well, why didn't you tell me there was water damage in this room? And I said, oh, my goodness, I haven't been in it in 6 months. So to have, to have a home that has so many rooms, you don't even use them or go into them or have
right.
no need to go there is just, silly. But,
right.
I am one of the things I am proud of, Shauna. I am capable of silliness.
Well, yes, that's clear, and I think that's a fantastic quality that you possess, Kay Ballard.
Yeah, I just, there's no getting around it. So tell me, Shauna, in your view, what is the role of humor in your life?
Oh, humor is, for me, it's an everyday tool or method that I employ, especially with clients, and I need a lot of humor sometimes with some of my clients. I can't imagine a life without silly, without humor, without laughter, without fun, because it would be pretty depressing. So it's critical to my happiness and survival that I have a daily dose of humor in whatever form that comes in.
Well, I love hearing that you use it as a tool as well. And by that, do you mean a tool of interaction with your clients, or do you mean just your own ability to deal with whatever situation your work with your clients presents?
Both. Sometimes I find that when I have to deal with difficult issues with my clients, I couch it in humor, and that tends to diffuse situations. So I use it to disarm. And so, yeah, I think that sometimes I'm pretty conscious about the way that I use it, but I also think that it's pretty innate. So it just sometimes rolls out, and maybe I say things in a way that others wouldn't think is suitable, but that's who I am. So there
you
have it.
And, you know, from the very first time I met you, I knew you were funny and responded to your humor. And we have had some good times. Now, one of the things that is very funny about your initiative is that it has this little piece. I'm fascinated by it. I don't want to play. But a lot of people are going to enjoy that and respond to it. And people listening may want to do this themselves. They can read all about it on your $100 wardrobe challenge. You are having clothing exchange parties. And
yep.
They have a funny name.
Yes, they do. The Naked Lady Parties, or as my friend Sophia likes to say, Naked Lady Parties.
Well, she says it right, darling. She says
it
right.
She does naked.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I grew up in Texas. It's naked, trust me.
Yes,
okay, so
naked.
Tell us about Sophia. Good one. Okay. tell us about this. You know, how are these going to work?
Okay, well, this is the fun part. First of all, group of gals get together. You can do this anywhere, anytime. We are having our first of what I imagine will be several Naked Lady Parties here in San Diego, and it will be held at a friend of mine. She's got a beautiful place she calls Casa Milagro. It's a lovely little Spanish cottage. And so basically what happens is you bring all of your unwanted but still very usable, clean, and good repair clothing to this party, along with a bottle of your favorite beverage and a snack for the potluck. And we throw everything in a pile. And basically, we just go through it and take what we want and try on new combinations of outfits that probably the original owner of that item or those items hadn't considered. And if there's any sort of battle over who knows what, a bolero or that dirndl skirt perhaps, then we'll have a model off where each person has to model it and the crowd can vote on who it looks the best on, and that's the person that gets it.
Oh, what a great idea. Oh, what a great idea. See, I'm liking it better because I would win. I would win.
Well, of course, you'd win the model off. That's why you're not allowed to come to ours, because nobody'd get any clothes. So, you know,
but here's the thing. I mean, wouldn't the thing to do be to identify friends of yours who have just the best clothes and also wear your same size and make sure you get them to the party? Wouldn't that be a good idea?
Well, yeah, that's kind of what I tried to do, and I wish you wouldn't expose all my secrets, Kay, on air. But, yes, we have some very fine and fashionable gals showing up. And to address the issue of size and all of that, we are including accessories. So there are some fabulous, I'm sure, scarves, necklaces, all that kind of thing that'll be in the Naked First Naked Lady Party. And this is another way I think that it's important to make clear that while you are only going to spend $100 of your money retail, there are ways to grow your wardrobe that are a lot smarter than just going to the store and spending money. And this happens to be one of them. So if you go to the party and you enjoy some fine food and drink and frivolity with your friends and you take home 8 items, the caveat is you've had to have at least gotten rid of 8 items or be willing to get rid of that many when you take these new babies home.
Yeah. Well, it actually sounds like a lot of fun. And what a great opportunity to, if they're kind, to have the people there take a look at what you've chosen for yourself to see if it actually looks good on you. You have been so much fun today. You know, you said you were a tiny bit nervous. This was an hour before the show. No one would ever know. No one would ever know. And I'm sure that our listeners are going to want to follow the progress of your initiative and join up themselves. So I can't wait to see photographs of the naked
you
lady.
Will.
You know, but please make them G-rated. You know,
they will please. Be. They will. Be.
Okay. Okay.
We would want to offend your sensibilities.
So. Next week, our guest is Lori Foley, and I'm going to be asking her, Shauna, the 200 dumbest questions about email.
Oh, wow. Well, that'll be great. I'll be sure to tune in for that.
Thanks for tuning. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Kay. Bye.
You have been listening to Women Are Not Funny Radio, a New Media International production. On behalf of Kay Ballard, her fabulous guest, and the secretly hilarious Women Are Not Funny team, thanks for being here. You can listen to our replays anytime you please, but it's so much more fun when you're here. So join us again live next Friday afternoon for Women Are Not Funny Radio.